Today on Annenberg Radio News.
The suggestion that Mahoney might want to stay home was so typical of the Vatican. They would never come out and say he shouldn't vote or he doesn't belong.
Catholic Church expert Jason Berry responds to criticism of Cardinal Roger Mahoney from a high-ranking Vatican official. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, February 21st, 2013. I'm Omar Shamoot. Democratic Congresswoman Linda Sanchez is pushing for more federal money to prevent gun violence in Los Angeles. She wants to amp up the city's gun buyback program, Fiona Wang reports.
The gun buyback program in Los Angeles successfully took more than 2,000 guns off the street last year. Congresswoman Linda Sanchez is introducing legislation that would give local communities more money to buy back guns.
Well, there are a number of studies that have been conducted that show that getting guns off the street does make our community safer, whether it's through accidental shootings or whether it's through intentional gun violence. When you reduce the number of guns that are out on the streets, you do increase safety in your communities.
Sanchez says a gun buyback program provides people financial incentives. When they turn in their guns, they'll get a gift card that can be used for groceries, anywhere from $50 to $350. But criminology and gun experts have doubts about buyback programs.
Unfortunately, there is no good evidence that these buyback programs reduce rates of street crime in the U.S.
That is Jan Vernick, the co-director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Policy and Research.
The most high-risk people for being either the victim or the perpetrator of gun violence in the United States are young males, and overwhelmingly young males don't participate in buybacks.
Sanchez says buyback programs are not the sole answer to solve gun violence, but she says they are one part of the solution.
We're not saying that this piece of legislation is the perfect answer to gun violence in our society, but it is one tool more in an officer's toolbox to try to help prevent intentional and unintentional gun violence.
Under the proposed program, the Department of Justice would give grants to local communities. Then it's up to the local agencies to get rid of the weapons. In an interview, Sanchez said,
They do lots of creative things. Sometimes they melt them down for scrap metal. There is one city that melted down all the guns that they received and created a sculpture in their community with it. So there are a number of things that they can do with it, but they dispose of them in a responsible manner.
It's not just gun buybacks. With more federal money, local governments can run gun safety and anti-violence campaigns. Fiona Wen, Annenberg Radio News.
There's been no movement in Congress today to avoid the looming budget cuts. Across the board, federal spending cuts are due to take effect March 1st. In Washington, it's known as the sequester, but Sarah Politis looks at how the cuts will affect the Head Start program here in Los Angeles.
Thousands of children in the state of California are a part of the Head Start program, a federally funded preschool for low-income families. Interim director for the Head Start program at USC, Philippa Johnson, says there are 577 children and families in the USC program alone.
We're addressing a need in the community, which is to provide quality services to families and high-quality education to children ages birth to age 5.
While nothing is for certain, Johnson is predicting a 5% cut in funding, which she says would result in personnel cuts. Head Start says an estimated 27,000 children and their families will be dropped from the program in California, and 6,000 staff members will lose their jobs. But Johnson doesn't seem worried. She thinks the only impact on students will be on the budget for field trips.
We'll still provide food, nutritional services. We will continue providing services to families, social services. So I don't see that, because that is really the framework of the Head Start program.
Head Start isn't the only federal program on the chopping block. Defense workers and national parks also face cuts. Sarah Politis, Annenberg Radio News.
Okay. A memorial service for Jerry Buss, the former owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, is being held this afternoon. Reporter Evan Budrovich is live at the Nokia Theater downtown. What's the atmosphere like, Evan?
Well, what started off as a somber event, hundreds of people came into the Nokia Center. Right now, people are very excited, energetic, listening to fun stories, especially guys like Johnny Buss, his son, Jim Hill in attendance, Phil Jackson, you name it, the stars are out today. Even Paula Abdul has made a guest appearance here at the Nokia Center. It's been a great event. People are really enjoying the life of Dr. Buss and celebrating his hard work and passion that he instilled on a daily basis.
So what else have you heard about what people are saying about Dr. Buss and his life and legacy?
Well, let's start off with his son, Johnny, his oldest son. Johnny put it, I think, best. Dr. Buss is 80 years old, and he said, I wish I had another 80 with my father. He is a beloved man in the city, and I love him just as much as anyone, and I feel like he's been a great role model for me.
All right. Thank you so much, Evan. That was Evan Budrovich reporting from the memorial service for Jerry Buss outside the Nokia Theater. Let's look at the weather. It'll be another cold one this evening as temperatures dip into the low 40s. Daytime temps tomorrow will reach the high 60s. The rest of the weekend we'll see mostly clear skies and temperatures warming up slightly on Sunday with an expected high of 72 degrees. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we take a look at how dads are helping children in Watts learn to love reading. The third in our series of mayoral candidate profiles features Jan Perry. She's running behind Wendy Gruhl and Eric Garcetti in polls, and only two candidates will make the runoff election in May. As Rosalie Murphy reports, Perry is a city council veteran who toes the line between South LA activism and downtown business development.
There are two narratives about city council member Jan Perry. In one, she's a crusader for poor communities in South LA. The woman who invested on Figueroa and reaped the benefits for Main Street. But in the other, she's the union-busting pragmatist who shut down the push for a fresh and easy on Central and Adams a few years ago.
I think I step in the shoes of most people. I think the greatest source of my passion is my desire, my very strong desire to help people move forward. It's obvious that I'm a woman. I'm a woman of color. I'm also Jewish, and I communicate in Spanish.
Perry has represented Council District 9 since 2001. During her tenure, she tightened restrictions on fast food restaurants, installed the Central Avenue Farmers Market, and directed millions of dollars into parks and affordable housing. She also championed the Central Avenue Jazz Festival and won awards for restoring her district's wetlands.
Well, over the last 12 years, when we had the redevelopment agency, I leveraged tax increment and took it south to develop more housing, to bring in more neighborhood retail, to basically create a climate that was far more receptive to business. I will continue to leverage construction of housing and retail.
CD9 has historically been represented by an African American, but in the past few decades, it's become about 80% Latino. Perry has worked hard to win support from her Latino constituents, too. Mark Gorey, a South LA preacher, noticed her history of engagement at a recent mayoral forum.
The voice of the community. The voice of the communities is very, very important on what happens in this city. And each community needs to have their issues addressed individually.
But on the other hand, there's the Perry who installed LA Live and advocated for USC's Village Project. And city politics writer Ron Kay says those put her at the beck and call of developers like AEG.
Jan has done everything she can that the Central City Association wants, that downtown developers want, that certainly that AEG wants. So she's done everything she can because that's where the money was for her campaign.
Perry is decidedly pro-business. That's helped cull support among fiscal conservatives in the San Fernando Valley, who might have leaned toward Kevin James or Wendy Gruhl. Garcetti and Gruhl, who lead in the polls, have also gathered union support. Perry hasn't. Here's Kay again.
She's always, you know, not against unions, but questioned. I mean, in her own way, Jan is stronger than, as a personality, Gruhl or Garcetti, and is more capable of fighting, at least on some of the issues.
Most public employee unions have lined up behind Gruhl, but Perry says that binds Gruhl to them and limits her flexibility on pension reform, one of this year's leading issues.
Well, they haven't spoken about getting employees back to the table and giving back on their health care and pension costs, because that is the hardest, absolute hardest thing to do, particularly if you're a candidate who's been heavily endorsed by some of the more powerful public employee unions. You know, a campaign who has received the benefit of that kind of money will not say that your employees need to create salary parity. They will not say that your employees need to give back more on their pension costs.
Perry is a Democrat who agrees with Gruhl and Garcetti on most issues. All three oppose the half-cent sales tax increase on Merge's ballot. And Perry says her years of experience have taught her how to use the council's resources, and that would make her a well-prepared mayor. Sherita Herring, a South L.A. entrepreneur running for the 9th District seat, appreciates the work Perry did in city government, but she's worried that Perry's cozy relationship with downtown developers threatens her ability to really advocate for poor Angelenos.
Right now, the Staples Center, and when there's a game there, every game generates $3 million, every single game. How much of that is impacting these surrounding communities who are going to be impacted when the stadium comes here and there's more traffic? There's, what is going to be the trickle down? Their home isn't right here on 41st and Broadway.
Perry's goal, though, is to maintain her political tightrope until March 5th. And she's counting on crowds on both sides to keep her balance. Rosalie Murphy, Annenberg Radio News.
Tune in next week for our profiles on Eric Garcetti and Wendy Gruhl. Pope Benedict is considering a rule change that will allow a new pope to be chosen before March 15th. Currently, the process of electing a successor cannot begin sooner than 15 days after the pope abdicates. Benedict will step down on February the 28th. The rule change would allow a new pope to be in place by Palm Sunday on March 24th in order to lead Easter services at the Vatican. Jason Barry was the first investigative reporter to tackle the Catholic sex abuse scandal in the U.S. head-on in the 1980s. His 2004 book, Vows of Silence, exposed the culture of secrecy in the Church under Pope John Paul II. I spoke with him today about the resignation of Pope Benedict and the role of former Los Angeles Archbishop Roger Mahoney in next month's papal conclave.
As an investigative reporter who's covered the Catholic Church and the Vatican for decades, how surprised were you when Pope Benedict announced his resignation?
I was really not that surprised because in an interview he gave in 2010, he was asked directly if he would ever consider resigning, and he said, in essence, yes. His answer was not at this moment. That was in 2010, in the middle of all the convulsions over the abuse cases in Europe. But he said that if the time came when he felt he was not in condition to continue, that he would do so. And when I was in Rome last November, one of the papal audiences I attended, with the large video screens now, even though one sits far back among thousands of people, you get a pretty good image of the Pope. His voice was tired. He looked older, a bit more frail. And with all of the problems that have happened since the arrest and conviction of the papal butler as well, I was not surprised. I don't think he had control of his bureaucracy in his inner circle, and I think his energy was ebbing as well.
What do you think the top priority will be for the College of Cardinals as they head into the conclave?
I think the main priority will be to find a pope who will have an image of a pastor. They desperately need someone who can reduce the internal tensions, put a good face forward in the best sense because of the scandals that have been trailing the Vatican in recent years, and someone who, in the prism of global media, can stand as a symbol of the peacemaker. I mean, that is the paramount image of the Pope, as a global statesman standing for the values of peace.
A little closer to home, Cardinal Mahoney, of course, still has a vote in the conclave. He said he will be traveling to Rome to vote. But there's been a lot of backlash against that. This week, even a cardinal at the Vatican has criticized him and said he might want to stay home. How do you react to that?
Well, the cardinal who made the statement was Cardinal De Paulis, who was formerly the head of the economic prefecture, he is a man who has audited the books of the Holy See for a long time. He also happens to be the overseer of the Legion of Christ, a religious order that's been rocked by a series of scandals. The suggestion that Mahoney might want to stay home was so typical of the Vatican. They would never come out and say he shouldn't vote or he doesn't belong here. But it was a real swipe at a cardinal who has historically, Mahoney, wielded substantial power within the Vatican, because the Los Angeles Archdiocese is one of the largest and is probably the wealthiest of any in the world. Milan is larger in terms of people, but not in terms of wealth. Mahoney sits on the board of the Vatican Bank. My guess is that one could find any number of dioceses in foreign countries that have felt his financial support. So he is in the crisis of his life because of all these documents coming out. This is an element of tragedy about him. Certainly someone who failed in the end to uphold the values of human life when it comes to the sanctity of children. I think most people will remember him as someone who betrayed the basic standards of truth and honesty and being a forthright pastor.
You can read Jason Berry's current reporting on the church in the National Catholic Reporter and on the website Global Post. The Academy Awards are just around the corner. Film fans everywhere are wondering which movie will take home Hollywood's top honor. Here's arts and culture producer Kat Bauza.
I'm here with Robert Calcagno. He's a columnist at the Daily Trojan. He writes a column every Friday called Box Office Beat, and we're here to talk about the Academy Awards, which are happening this Sunday. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Kat.
So let's start off talking about Best Director. We don't see Quentin Tarantino on this list. We don't see Ben Affleck on this list. And we don't see Kathryn Bigelow on this list either. Why were there so many snubs in the Best Director category this year?
With Kathryn Bigelow, this is the weird thing about the politics with the Oscars, is that she had already won one. Ben Affleck, for him, it's the same type of thing where you almost feel like, you know, they didn't quite feel like he had reached the point where you could consider him best director material.
And so will we see likely a Spielberg win for Lincoln? Spielberg is the safer choice, and the Academy does tend to go for safer choices.
Well, don't forget, Ang Lee is also a runner-up as well. And I believe it's very much going to be the momentum of the night. I would pay attention if Life of Pi is able to get pretty much the majority of those technical awards, then Ang Lee may be able to be the spoiler.
Moving on to Best Actor. So Daniel Day-Lewis, he seems the runaway pick.
Guaranteed. Does anyone
else even stand a chance? I mean, we have Bradley Cooper with Silver Linings Playbook, who delivered a pretty tremendous performance.
True. I would give it 95% for Daniel Day-Lewis. Winning this award would actually make him the only actor to win three Oscars in the Best Acting category.
So moving on to Best Actress, Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty and Jennifer Lawrence for Silver Linings Playbook. They are obviously the clear frontrunners, but we also have Quvenzhané Wallace, who is 9 years old, the youngest actress to ever be nominated in the category.
And we also have the oldest actress that's ever been nominated in the category, Emmanuelle Riva, who's 86 years old for her performance in Amour. She is the center of that film. She could be the spoiler.
So moving on to the final category, everyone's favorite, Best Picture. Argo seems to be a critical and a public favorite. It also won the Golden Globe. But could Argo really win it all?
At this point, the only argument that you can make against it is history. The last time that a film won without the Best Director being nominated was Driving Miss Daisy. And Driving Miss Daisy was actually considered an upset back in 1989. But before that, you would actually have to go back to the 30s to find the last time that the Best Picture was able to win without the Best Director being nominated.
Well, it should be a very exciting Oscar ceremony this Sunday. So thank you, Robert, for joining us.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
That was Kat Bauza speaking with movie buff Robert Calcagno from the Daily Trojan. And now something for the foodies. Reporter Tanaya Ghosh loves food, and she'll be sharing her thoughts on some of LA's great restaurants in a new segment called Tanaya's Table. This week, she visits Mel's Fish Shack, a small South Los Angeles restaurant that's been serving up fried and grilled seafood for over 30 years.
Some of the best hidden gems in LA are tiny, unassuming eateries, and Mel's Fish Shack is a prime example. If you're a fan of delicious Cajun-style seafood fried up in a homey, friendly atmosphere, then Mel's is the spot for you. The best part, Mel's won't force you to break the bank. Nearly everything on the menu is under $12. Mel's Fish Shack is located in the Crenshaw District of Los Angeles. The fish is served fresh from their market, which you can visit just a few blocks away. Once the staff discovered we were first-timers, we couldn't stop the flow of free samples. One of the best samples, the creamy, dreamy crab soup. The soup is available only on Mondays when Mel's gets its fresh crab. The shells are cooked right in the pot, infusing a richer taste into the soup. I ordered the grilled red snapper with grilled vegetables, and we also ordered a fillet of sole fried in a light southern-style cornmeal batter. The warm side of hush puppies are crunchy, springy, soft bites of heaven in a deep-fried ball. Dip them into the signature garlic dill tartar sauce or hot sauce, and they're even more delicious. Now, I'm picky with seafood, but Mel's totally won me over. Mel's Fish Shack is a hole-in-the-wall adventure that's totally worth it. You might come for the fresh seafood, but you'll keep coming back for the excellent hospitality. Stay tuned until next time when I share with you my next foodie find. Tanaya Ghosh, Annenberg Radio News.
Dads grabbed a donut and read a book to their kids today for the 5th annual Donuts with Dads. The event is designed to further the improvement of schools in the Watts neighborhood. Claire Pyres sat in on the event this morning.
So she climbed down and she sat in the medium-sized mama bear chair, but this chair was too soft for her.
In their colorful classrooms, kids squirmed in their seats as they gleefully listened to their dads read to them in Spanish and English at the 99th Street Elementary School. Principal Courtney Sawyer laughed at their excitement.
You might have noticed this morning when they were lining up, they were wild. It was like they all ate a pound of sugar for breakfast. And that's because here at 99, Donuts with Dads is our equivalent of Christmas morning.
Since its launch 5 years ago, Donuts with Dads has increased parent participation from 20% 5 years ago to 90% currently. Noel Ramirez, a father at the event, says it provides a sense of community.
I have two children, daughter and son.
And do you feel like it's a good event that they do every year?
Very good. It's very good for the children, especially for the inner city, and it gives them a sense of community.
About 150 dads, policemen, and mentors from Watts showed up today to read as their kids watched with wide-eyed attention.
Chica y yo salimos afuera. Recoge flores para recoger la canasta de tía.
Occasionally, the kids would take over.
I can go under the big star, too. I can look up and see the big star.
The CEO of the Partnership for Los Angeles Schools, Marshall Tuck, says this school has made a significant improvement in test scores.
I've seen this school go from, you know, one of the lowest performing elementaries in LA Unified to now a school that we believe this year is going to be above 800 on the API for the state, which means it's a successful school. And to have that happen in a few years in the heart of Watts is a phenomenal thing.
And the kids approve.
We get to go outside in recess, but it's much funner in class.
Really? Why?
Because you get to do math, and if you don't know it, you get to learn it, and that's kind of fun for your mind.
In addition to Donuts with Dads, the school hosts monthly events like Muffins with Moms to encourage parent and community participation. Claire Pyres, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Eric Burst to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Hey, ARN. Eric Burst here from Annenberg TV News. Coming up on our broadcast at 6, Southern California and the Lakers are remembering owner Jerry Buss at this hour. A ceremony is being held at the Staples Center where Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal are expected to speak. In fact, the USC marching band just got done performing there. We'll have a complete wrap-up in sports. And also, SoCal is remembering the deputy killed in the Christopher Dorner shootout in Big Bear last week, Sheriff's Deputy Jeremiah McKay was remembered as a cop's cop with an infectious sense of humor. We'll have a full report on that as well. Join us at 6 on Trojan Vision or online at atvn.org.
Thanks very much, Eric. Well, that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Olivia Nyland. Molly Gray was our producer. Good night.